And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your front range morning news program here on Community Radio KGNU. It's Friday, January 31st. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanley Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from two CU students who are headed to Washington, D.C. this weekend to lobby elected officials about the need to have climate change legislation, particularly the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. Then we'll speak live with a young professional ski mountaineer and adventurer about the rally she's hosting in Denver today, aimed at inspiring the outdoor industry currently gathered in Denver to address climate change. Then we'll hear about Noche de Peña, an event happening in Boulder this weekend. At 8:30, we go to Connections. This morning with KGNU's Roger Wendell, part one of the show will feature a conversation with Professor Philip Jeff about his latest book, Galileo's Error, Foundations for a New Science of Consciousness. And part two of the program will focus on the impeachment proceedings of President Trump. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
There is an arrest warrant for a Fort Collins woman who was wanted on suspicion of perjury after lying on her red flag petition against the police officer who killed her son. The Larimer County Sheriff's Office issued the warrant on suspicion of first-degree perjury and attempt to influence a public servant. On January 16th, a judge denied the woman, Susan Holmes, the request for an extreme risk protection order against Philip Morris, a Colorado State University police officer. Morris was involved in the shooting death of her son in 2017. Holmes sought to have his guns taken away using the state's new red flag law. The judge said she didn't have a legal standing to file the petition. Holmes said on the petition that she and Morris shared a child together. In an interview with the Denver Post, she said that wasn't true, but that she had a legal theory she wanted to use to justify her statement. She declined to explain the legal theory. Under Colorado law, only family and household members, as well as law enforcement officers, can file red flag petitions. Colorado took one step closer to repealing the death penalty on Thursday, with state senators advancing a bill after 6 hours of emotional debate. Lucy Haggerty has more.
Debate began in the morning and lasted for over 6 hours, well into the afternoon. Multiple amendments were proposed throughout the debate as well, including for a ballot measure this fall, but all were rejected. Notably, Rhonda Fields, a Democrat from Aurora, strayed from her party in arguing against the bill. Fields' son and his fiance were murdered years ago, and their killers are two of the three people currently on death row. This is the seventh time that the state legislature has considered repealing the death penalty. Colorado has abolished and restored the death penalty multiple times since becoming a state. Most recently, voters opted to bring the death penalty back in 1974. One person has been executed since then. For KGNU, I'm Lucy Haggard.
Three Republican senators, most of the Senate Democrats, voted in favor of the bill. The final Senate vote comes this morning, but that is considered a formality. Voters who want to participate in the upcoming primaries just have a few days left if they want to change parties. Maeve Conran has more.
Monday is the last day for voters to change party affiliation or become unaffiliated before the 2020 primary ballots are mailed out. Democrats have 17 candidates to consider, while Republicans have six, including the incumbent president. Unaffiliated voters will receive both Democrat and Republican ballots, but they can only vote in one. The state will begin distributing ballots on February 10th in advance of the primary, which happens on March 3rd. For KGNU, I'm Maeve Conran.
On Thursday, a report from the Colorado Automotive Dealers Association said that Colorado auto sales dropped for the first time in 3 years. The Denver Post reports that Colorado consumers registered nearly 6,000 fewer new vehicles last year than they did in 2018. The report highlights a nearly 15% decline in new passenger sedan registrations. The more fuel-efficient passenger sedans have fallen more than 14% a year for 2 years in a row. But Tesla electric vehicles saw registrations rise nearly 25% last year. New light truck registrations were up slightly. New vehicle sales are down even though the state's unemployment rate reached a historic low in December. Registrations of used vehicles were up nearly 6% through November, and since 2016, used sales began to outnumber new sales. And in weather, mostly sunny and breezy today, with a high in the lows to mid-50s. Tonight, clear with the lows expected to be in the 30s. Saturday and Sunday, sunny and warm. Weekend predicted, high 62 on Saturday, high near 70 on Sunday. And then, snow likely on Monday. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
And you're listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. Two CU students are headed to Washington, D.C. this weekend as part of a delegation with the Citizens Climate Lobby. CCL lobbyists have met with lawmakers before, encouraging them to support climate legislation. But this time, it'll be a different story. They're just meeting with conservative lawmakers. Maeve Conran spoke with students Kelsey Grant and Daniel Palkin.
Citizens Climate Lobby is a bipartisan climate organization. We bring in people all the way from the progressive left to large parts of the right. And over the 10 plus years of our existence, our conservative membership has grown to the point where we now have a critical mass where the conservatives in the organization want to get together from across the country, meet each other, and lobby Republican offices and try to remedy the fact that Republican offices, by and large, some with some exceptions, are lagging on climate solutions. So Colorado is actually at the forefront of this. We have a very purple state, and people here are very concerned with climate and with the environment for the obvious reason that we have so much natural beauty in our backyard. Colorado has more people going than any other state in the country to Citizens Climate Lobby's Conservative Lobby Day. So kudos to conservatives in this state.
Have you seen a change in conservative lawmakers' willingness to be receptive to the kind of information that you're going to be presenting? Has anything changed? Has anything moved at all in the last few years?
So yeah, there's some seriously positive indicators in this space, and yet at the same time, it's important to acknowledge that progress hasn't moved fast enough, which is why we're doing what we're doing. But to say one of the positive indicators, there's a resolution that's put forth every Congress by Representative Scalise, who's from Louisiana, and he's very much an opponent of carbon pricing, which is the policy we support. And he puts forth a resolution that says this House of Representatives does not support any bill that puts a price on carbon, no matter what. So from our perspective as CCL, this is the exact opposite of what we want to see. And one indicator, one very powerful indicator of how supported a bill or a resolution is how many co-sponsors it gets, because that tells you how many lawmakers want to put their name and publicly take ownership of some sort of policy or policy resolution. Well, when he first introduced this in 2013, he had 155 co-sponsors with him. Introduced it again in the Congress of 2015, and he had something like 82. He introduced it again 2 years later in the 2017 Congress, had about 40 or 50 co-sponsors, and he introduced it again in this Congress in 2019, 24 co-sponsors on the proposal that said we don't support carbon pricing. So the number of, you might not know this from kind of following the media narrative around climate, which is very polarized, but within Republican offices, there's becoming an openness to listen to market-based solutions and to say, okay, maybe we're not going to put our name on the thing that opposes them, to kind of keep the door open to potentially supporting them somewhere down the line.
Give us a sense of what exactly you are talking to lawmakers about. What is the legislation and how close are you to actually seeing something either being introduced or ultimately passed?
So the legislation is the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It's a bill that actually, it's been introduced, it's in committee, and it has more co-sponsors by, I think, more than a factor of two now than any other piece of carbon pricing legislation in the history of our country. So that's including the Waxman-Markey bill, the famous piece of legislation that got pretty close to the finish line in 2010. And what's notable about our climate legislation is we're part of a wave of new carbon pricing bills, ours being by far the largest and most supported, that have Republican co-sponsorship on them. So Francis Rooney of Florida is one of our original co-sponsors, and we're looking to add to that, of course. What the bill does is it places a price on the extraction of fossil fuels, And it lets markets decide how they're going to allocate resources in order to best bring down carbon usage. So it's technology agnostic, and it's in line with conservative ideas around the potency and efficiency of markets. But at the same time, it very much accomplishes the goal of reducing emissions almost all the way by mid-century.
What is it like for you as a college student, as a young person, to be able to go into the offices of lawmakers in Washington, D.C. and have them sit and listen to you explain your thoughts on what's happening with climate, but also your ideas on how to actually solve it?
The first time I lobbied, it was daunting. But, you know, what's really great about CCL is that they value the voice of young people. And so in every lobby meeting that I've gone to, I've always had people supporting me and telling me to speak up. They give me support. They give me resources. And you also realize that the aides and the lawmakers that you're talking to are also very responsive and willing to carry a conversation with you. So when you're a young person, you can carry an in-detail policy conversation with your lawmaker. It's a rather encouraging experience.
I mean, this idea of changing how we talk about climate, this is something that you're going to be participating in at a more local level, though, because on February 6th, you're going to be on a panel as part of a forum by the Center for the American West. And this is Why Are We Stuck in Dealing with Climate Change and How Do We Get Unstuck? Tell us a little bit about that. That's Thursday, February 6th.
Yeah, this is a panel I'm really excited to be on. Patty Limerick, who's the former Colorado State historian, I've seen her moderate panels before, and I never dreamed that I would be on one. This is a chance to talk to several other panelists, including a former Republican congresswoman who actually introduced one of the first ever in like the 1980s bills to combat global warming. So was very much on the eco right from a much earlier time than we even had that language for it. A professor at CU Boulder who does fascinating work on what kind of language helps move the conversation. And he Lee Van Boven really helps advance our knowledge in that space. And then a former worker in the oil and gas industry who was the head of the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. So this is going to be a very diverse, politically diverse, viewpoint diverse group of panelists. And we all share the objective of combating climate change. And we're going to talk out what that looks like from an advocacy or from an industry or from an academic or from a political perspective, and hopefully arrive at conclusions that audience members can take and go into the world and engage as citizens politically to help further the cause of advancing climate solutions.
Kelsey Grant and Daniel Palkin are members of the Citizens Climate Lobby. They're going to Washington, D.C. in the coming days to lobby conservative lawmakers to support climate legislation. You can find out more at energyinnovationact.org or citizensclimatelobby.org. Well, today is the final day of the annual Outdoor Retailer Show in Denver, where members of the industry check out the latest outdoor gear and network. And this afternoon, professional ski mountaineer and adventurer Caroline Gleick is hosting a climate rally to demand action on climate change and inspire the outdoor industry and larger community to take responsibility for driving systemic change for environmental protection. We want to thank you so much, Caroline, for joining us on the line this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before we begin, real quickly, tell us a little bit about some of what you've accomplished, some of your experiences in the outdoors.
Yeah, so I'm a professional ski mountaineer, so I make my living climbing up mountains and skiing down them. And I've climbed and skied all over the world. Most recently, in May of 2019, I climbed Everest or Chomolungma in May of 2019. And then I've also climbed and skied Choyu, which is the sixth highest peak in the world. So I ski for Patagonia, Cliff Bar, Keen Footwear, and a bunch of other brands that are here at the show in Denver.
So before we talk about the rally that's happening today, I want to dig right into the meat of it. Tell me about the role you feel that outdoor industry should play in addressing climate change.
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of how the industry has been addressing climate change, I feel like, you know, the outdoor industries and like the snow show is a big part of it. So there's a big there's a lot of representation from the snow sports industry here, and I feel like that some brands have like sort of dabbled into talking about it, but a lot of people really sort of tiptoe around the issue. And I'd really like to see the industry take a much bigger stance and to really start to use some of their political clout to influence public policy.
And who do you think some of the heroes have been when it comes to the outdoor world? People that are really, or organizations that you have seen doing all of your adventuring and mountaineering that you feel like are really taking charge?
I mean, I think one of the biggest leaders in the environmental movement today is Patagonia. I've been an athlete for them for almost a decade, and they've really set some ambitious climate goals, and they've really used their influence. They've really mobilized the community and used their influence effectively to create positive outcomes for the environment.
And what about blind spots? I mean, you have to see, I'm sure, areas that you feel like, man, this really needs addressing. This might be a blind spot in the industry that we need to work on. You mentioned perhaps using more of that clout the industry has. But are there other things that you kind of see that you feel like there could be improvements made within the outdoor industry to address some of the threats to climate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I've always recognized, and especially now, I've been working with these climate activists and their leadership, and their movement is very intersectional. And within the outdoor industry, there's still a big problem with diversity and with representation of women and people of color and disabled people and just a whole wide range of issues of representation. And I feel like our climate movement, it needs, well, first of all, if we want people to care about the environment, they have to have access to the outdoors and clean air and clean water. And those are basic human rights. And so I feel like there's definitely a lot more work that needs to be done to make the outdoors more inclusive and diversified and to feel accessible to people from all different walks of life and socioeconomic backgrounds.
And we'll talk about the rally here in just a second. But before we do, there's a climate toolkit that's developed. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I've been organizing this march with one of my friends, Katie Bouet, and she just founded the Outdoor Advocacy Project, and so she's developed a really cool social media toolkit that has tons of resources for people that want to learn more and take action. So that's on her website, on their website, outdooradvocacyproject.com.
And so now let's dig into it. Tell us about the rally today. What are the details? Who's speaking? Give us that information.
Yeah, so the rally today will start gathering at the Colorado Convention Center at 1:30, and then we'll start marching at 2. So from 2 to 3, we'll have a big group marching from the Convention Center to the Capitol, and then from 3 to 4, we'll have our speakers, and then at 4:15, we'll have a press huddle in case there are members of the press that want to speak to any of our speakers further. And for our speakers, we have an amazing lineup. I will be emceeing with Katie Bouet. We have former Miss Native American USA, Sarah Ortegon, doing our land acknowledgement. And then we have Madhvi Chitor and Haven Coleman and Marlo Baines, who are three youth activists who've been really big leaders in the movement. And then we have Jeremy Jones, the professional snowboarder and founder of Protect Our Winners, speaking, as well as Claire Gallagher, who is a fellow Patagonia ambassador and ultra trail runner extraordinaire and climate activist. And then we have Denali Hodgson. She's a fisherwoman from the Arctic, and as well as a writer and the founder of the On the Land podcast. And then we'll hear from Jody and Quanah Rose, who are they are defenders of the Arctic and outdoors people. And so we have a really exciting lineup.
And if people want to hear that again, perhaps they're driving to work right now and they want to get this information again, is there a Facebook page or a place that they can find it?
Yeah, the Facebook page is called the Climate Rally 2020, so you should be able to find it under events. And I can, send a link as well.
We'll push that on our page here as well. If you go to the archives at kgnu.org and check out that space there for today's show, we'll post a link there as well. And that was professional ski mountaineer and adventurer Caroline Gleick speaking to us in advance of the climate rally she's hosting in Denver this afternoon. Again, that's starting at 1:30 at the Blue Bear in front of the Colorado Convention Center. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus, featuring Voyagers, a theatrical performance offering creative access to science and math through the performing arts. More information at colorado.edu/Fisk or by calling 303-492-5002.
And you're listening to The Morning Magazine, your weekly morning news programming here at KGNU. This coming Saturday, February 1st, the Dairy Arts Center will be hosting the 4th Noche de Peña, a fun-filled and popular event that brings the Latinx community and beyond together for a casual and participatory social event centered around live music that celebrates community through music, poetry, and food. Peñas have been held clandestinely in Latin America as a way of resistance to oppressive atmospheres.
The way we explain it is that it celebrates community through music, through poetry, through prose, through food, it's a cultural event. And Peñas have a very rich history throughout Spain and Latin America, but also a very diverse history depending on the country. In Spain, Peñas often celebrate flamenco culture. In Peru, they really tend to focus on what's known as the música criolla, which is a group of subgenres that are the result of the fusion between Spanish culture and Andean indigenous culture and the cultures of the African diaspora. And so in Peru, you will typically hear huayno, festejo, marinera at the peñas. And while in Chile and Argentina and Cuba, countries that went through civic unrest in the 1960s and 70s, a lot of the Peña music there will focus on Nueva Canción and Nueva Trova, which is more of a revolutionary music. And in a lot of countries, the Peñas were celebrated clandestinely. Uruguay, Paraguay, Guatemala, El Salvador, Brazil. Peñas, during a certain period, were also held clandestinely. Countries where you had a curfew and you couldn't be out. There couldn't be more than 5 people together at someone's house. Those kind of rules led to Peñas going underground and giving voice to social and political issues of the human condition. It is funded by a grant by the Boulder Arts Commission. And our musicians this time around will be Paola Inés y Norte Sur. It's a group that brings folk music from the Andes. And it's composed by people from lots of different countries, but mostly Bolivia. And then we also have Adolfo Romero and the Sudaca Project. And Adolfo is an artist from Chile. He has played at all of our peñas, and we are super lucky to have him come from Denver and bring the Sudaca Project with him. The Sudaca Project is an acoustic band of Latin American music made up of Frank Ayala, Nico Cornejo, who comes from a family of musicians from Chile, based in Denver, and also Adolfo Romero. And they fuse folkloric and African root styles. They search for sounds without borders and play music whose lyrics are the echo of a message of social justice, solidarity, and mestizo pride. We will also have Victor Mestas, who is based here in Boulder. Victor is going to be playing with Jose Luis. And we also have poetry at our events. And for this Peña, we will have two poets, Asunción Horno Delgado, who is a poet from Spain and was a professor for many, many years at the University of Colorado Boulder. She was my professor. And then we also have Rosina Revello, who is a community member, and she is from Uruguay. And this event is, everybody's invited, open to the public. And yeah, it's a really great opportunity to come and see something different when it comes to Latino culture. I think the reason why the Peñas have been so successful is that oftentimes, Latino music and culture from Latin America gets sort of narrowed down to the tropical beats, salsa, merengue, cumbia, and música ranchera. And the truth is that there are so many other genres of music that are that come from Latin America and that we share with the community at the Peña. So I hope to see everybody there. Tickets are already on sale. You can go to thedairy.org and search for Noche de Peña. And it's February 1st at 7 p.m. at the Dairy Arts Center.
And this event is open to the general public and is a great opportunity to hear those different genres of Latin music. You can find out more at the Dairy Arts Center website. And that does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Lee Myers.